At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Dinah didn't talk to anyone about his experience because he thought he would be considered crazy. However, what he did was to write what he remembered, relating to what he had seen of the future, along with the difficult language and the rough style that Dinah notes have, made the diary even more difficult to understand.
When I heard the story, I thought, man, this is so phenomenal, if it's true. Achilles, and how do you pronounce your last name?
Sirigos.
How'd you stumble onto this?
I think the story stumbled on me because my brother gave me the book, an edition which was published on 2001. And then, I don't know, I get addicted, I think.
Valley of the Roses?
Yes.
Okay.
The Greek edition is called The Valley of the Roses, but this is a title that the publisher chose. The author, if we can call him an author, never intended his words to be revealed as a book. It was his diary.
At that time, it would have been really controversial and would have maybe cast him in the light of being insane to try and put this out as real.
Yes,
and so he's like
about 1920s, before the Great Depression, between the First and the Second World War, a difficult time for Europe. Let's call him the author. His name is Paul Amadeus Dinah, or was. He was a Swiss-Austrian teacher with very fragile health. His father, as we know, was a German-speaking Swiss, and his mother was an Austrian from Salzburg. That guy had an amazing experience. Before we go to his experience, maybe we should have a little bit more data about him. As we know from his student, George Papahadzis, which was a student of Dinah when he came to Greece to teach German. Papahadzis was the guy that Dinah left his diary. So from Papahadzis, we know that Dinah was born in a suburb of Zurich and lived his adolescence in a village near the Swiss city. And he later followed humanitarian studies with a strong inclination to the history of cultures and classical philology. It is believed that he died from tuberculosis, possibly in Athens, or in, on his way back to his homeland through Italy. We're talking about 1924. So that's a brief bio of, let's say, the author.
And when I read about this, there were like 1,000 copies or so printed at one time, always in Greek. This guy is in limbo for a year in a very, very rare state of unconsciousness, I guess, being in that coma. Can you give us a little bit of background on that?
I think he suffered from a kind of lethargic sleep or lethargic encephalitis, as I know is the encephalitis lethargica. It's a strange neurological disease that develops an immune system response to overloaded neurons. The first time that he fell into this lethargic sleep was just for 15 minutes. The second time was for a whole year. And during this year, Dinah was in a coma in a hospital of Zurich. What he claimed after that, when he revived, is that he entered the body of another person, whose name was Andreas Northam, but who was living in the year 3906. So when he recovered from his coma, Dinah didn't talk to anyone about his experience, because he thought he would be considered crazy. However, what he did was to write down what he remembered, relating to what he had seen of the future. And towards the end of his life, he stopped teaching his teaching job in order to have as much time as possible to write everything he could remember before he died. Because, as we said, he died in 1924. What Dinah describes in his diary is what he experienced of the environment and people of the year 3906. Okay, according, of course, to the mindset and the knowledge of a 20th century man, which he was. And this was not an easy task. That's why his diaries was originally very big.
Yeah.
Over 800 pages.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't meant to be a book. So there were many irrelevant things. And that's what I did. I edited his diary, avoiding all these irrelevant things and focusing on the essence, on the images of the future, on what he describes from the future, and of course leaving enough evidence to understand his mentality and his thoughts.
From the other information that I had, that there's also an underlying love story. Was that just a wishful thinking?
When Papahagis gradually finished with the translation of Dinah notes, which he did from a period of 14 years, from 1926 to 1940, mostly in his spare time and his summer breaks, then what he did was to share this amazing diary with some of his friends, which were mostly Masons, theosophists, who was a big movement in that era, professors of theology. He also gave it to two anti-Nazi Germans officers to tell him their opinion. After that, the diary was kept within a close philosophical circle and in the Teutonic Lodge, in which he was a member. And the book was taken very seriously by this lodge. They didn't want the information to be spread in a larger circle. They thought it was very valuable, essential information, not for the crowd. And they considered the book to be almost something like holy, containing wisdom from the future, and was kept for only for a few. But Papahagis, after some disputes, finally decided to publish the diary in a very bad period, just like now. It was during the period that Greece entered the hardest phase of the seven-year dictatorship back in 1972. There were very strong protests from certain church circles of the time who considered the book heretic because the book also describes about the religions, what people will believe after 2,000 years and stuff like that. So the fall of the dictatorship a year later practically condemned the first edition to oblivion. No one was interested in the future when the present was so violent and intense. And all these factors, along with the difficult language and the rough style that Dinah notes have, which was mixed together with elements of his past, as I said, along with his experience of the future, made the diary even more difficult to understand. Only a few had the time, the patience, and maybe the knowledge to decode some of this knowledge. When I read it, when I finally managed to read the big one,
all 830 pages of it.
Several times. I decided that this information belongs to humanity. It doesn't belong to some Greeks that have the patience and the time to decode all this stuff. So I tried without having to do anything with the essence of the book. I made sure not to change any of the content, just through filtering out the irrelevant notes from his early life and through emphasizing to his experience of the future in a similar language, because the language was also a problem, and without the gaps that Dinah narrations had, I tried to make this story accessible to the people and keep the true essence of the story, the information, of course. I think this was my debt to Dinah, because this book completely changed my perception of the past, of the present, and of the future. My whole perspective of life, I think.
I don't think that's an understatement, because it would be comparable to something that maybe for our language, for a comparison, Nostradamus or Edgar Casey, some of the people that we have based our ideas, that their philosophies and their ideas and their images and their visions have something to do with a future that we are approaching. Paul Dinah, when he went into his coma state and lived, you know, we might even look at it being in a parallel plane, that it could actually coincide with the time we're here. It's just a different time frame. And he goes into his life as, is it Andreas?
Yes.
Andreas. And he goes into that. And then when he goes back to sleep, he's still Paul. And so there's this thing of he goes back to sleep to be in the coma and kind of, you know, nondescript and, you know, non-active in this timeline. And then he goes back to that timeline. And all the while there, he's telling them what it was like for him to be in this timeline. And he's giving them information about where he came from. Because for him, this is like, oh my gosh, yesterday it was 1920 something, and now it's 3900. He writes it down, hoping that maybe somewhere along the line, this will make sense to people that he's leaving the notes for.
He really thought that the content of his diary, the content of his experience, actually, would help people to shape their immediate future better.
There is no other story like this. This is a near-death story, only it's actually from a coma where he goes into the future and comes back to tell what he experienced. It's a mind shift. Chronicles from the Future, the amazing story of Paul Amadeus Dinak. My guest, Achilles Sirigos, Wendy's Coffee House.
The problem that people had in order to find food and water, drinkable water for these people, is the reason of the next, let's say, big war.
Wendy's Coffee House, Chronicles from the Future, the amazing story of Paul Amadeus Dinak, being in a coma in 1921 and waking up in the year 3906. And it's a story he couldn't tell. Achilles Sirigos.
He was terrified that people should consider him as a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
What he wanted to do is to leave his notes to a trustworthy person, and a guy in his mid-20s, like Papahadzis was at that time, a brilliant student, was for Dinak a safe option because it was an adolescent going to a man. What Papahadzis didn't understand at the first readings of his notes was the amazing content. And I have to say that Papahadzis, which was a student at that time when he received Dinak's diary, he went on to become a very respectable man of his era. He was a vice president of the European Movement, the National Council of Greece, founding member of the Greek Philosophical Society, and professor of philosophy and culture. Okay, he's not a crazy person.
No, wonderful credibility.
Yes. And maybe it's interesting to see what his view was about Dinak's texts. Because he was the original translator.
Mm-hmm.
And his belief is that the inspiration, the writing of this text was not an imaginary creation of Dinak, but he thought that it was a true phenomenon of parapsychology that was linked to his life. Maybe he says that Dinak has also added his own things. Maybe he didn't see or live all of the events that he so vividly describes. But for Papahadzis, what is certain is that most of the basic elements of his texts are true experiences that he had. Papahadzis believed that Dinak lived in advance a part of the future through a metaphysical phenomenon of incredible clarity, of course, because mm-hmm. he remembered everything. And surely this is a phenomenon that rarely happens, at least with such an intensity and roughness.
Well, that's why the only thing I can compare it to is to people who've had the near-death experience and then come back and say, this is what happened, and they're, you know, very profound shifts in their consciousness where they aren't the same people that they were before they had the NDE. And this is what Paul's story is like.
A glimpse to the great beyond, maybe.
The prophecies. Can you share a few of those to give people who are listening, you know, an idea of why this is so incredible?
Yes, of course. It's not a hidden mystery, and I don't want to keep the audience in search of the book or something like that. This is not my intention to get rich from this book. My intention was from the start to make this book accessible and this knowledge accessible to simple people. I think they deserve it. Okay, let's talk about our century, which for the people in the future, they call our time medieval. For them, our time is not the contemporary time that is for us, who live in this era. They say that our era is part of their medieval era, of their ancient era. It's a time that people have lost their way in life, their way of thinking. They say that the great problem of our era will be overpopulation.
Mm-hmm.
For the whole century and the next to come. And he says that back in the 1920s, I have to say, which is the remarkable thing. He's talking about the nightmare of number. And he says that because of this problem, and the problem that people had in order to find food and water, drinkable water for these people, is the reason of the next, let's say, big war. Overpopulation, immigration, and the problem that humanity had to deal with food and accessible drinkable water.
Okay.
He's talking about globalization. I'm talking about the end of our century. According to his writings, the real globalization, with a good essence on the term globalization, because everybody can interpret the term how he likes. But we're talking about globalization where a person feels that he's, first of all, a person from Earth, not from United States or from Greece or from any part of the world. That kind of globalization will come at least after 100 years. The real one, and not the tries for globalization. He's talking about Mars and people getting there, which is also after the century, after the end of the century, to habit a planet that was made habitable for people from Earth.
Basically colonization.
Yes, colonization. Yes. And he also says about the destruction of this colonization. He says that after this colony thrived for a couple of decades, it was totally destroyed from meteors, from a rain of meteors, and 20 million people died. He said that this was the greatest destruction of humanity according to colonies out of Earth. And he also says that after that, the mankind never attempted another colony outside the Earth. That's what I can tell you for the two centuries that are coming to us. They're not very good, according to him. It's a time and a period that we have lost our true values. He says that at this time we will worship singers and footballers. He said that back in the 20s.
See, that's what's so fascinating to me is some of this stuff. He's like, oh, how could he have a clue?
Yes.
Even the guy who's translating it for him and sharing it. You know, you've got three people here working. The guy who had the experience, the guy who's translating it, and then another translator. And this all still fits with our mainstream viewpoint that we're living through in this moment, which to me gives it some credibility, even though it's phenomenal. It's just, whoa, how, you know, there's no explanation for it.
I don't know. For a man that never meant his writings to be a book. we have to emphasize on that, because these weren't the scripts that a guy gave to a publisher in order to publish them. These were saved by Papahadze's determination. And hopefully this can be something that the whole mankind can share.
Does he get into whether we become galactic citizens in this, you know, by 3900? Do we get to become global and galactic and part of, you know, is there an ET involved? Does he address that?
No, he doesn't say much about ETs. The only thing that he says is that the extraterrestrials approached the people from Earth in order to give them some instructions how to avoid their total destruction from the use of weapons. And that's what he says.
Uh-huh. And he came back before it ended, obviously.
Yes. Yes, something like that.
I'm gonna wake up now. I've got a year and this isn't good.
Another amazing thing is that he says that during his stay in the future, for a whole year, he never slept. He couldn't sleep. And the scientists of that era told him that this was okay as long as every night he was lying on a couch with his feet up. So for a whole year, he never slept. For the whole period that Paul Amadeus Dinah was in a coma, so sleeping in Zurich in 1954, Andreas Northam, with the conscience of Paul Amadeus Dinah, was awake.
Achilles Sirigos. editor of the first English version of Chronicles from the Future. He says the story captivated him not because of the chaos and catastrophes in the forecast, and you've heard some of those, okay, but because of the enlightenment humans managed to achieve. The diary is absolutely incredible. And I had seen two or three versions of this before I stumbled onto the fact that he was going to come out with the actual book in English. It's out now on Amazon. When I found it, it was still in bits and pieces on different blogs across the internet. The cool thing is, though, Paul Dinock went to 3906, which means we're going to be around. That's the good news. Getting there, that's where the speed bumps come in. Back in a few, Wendy's Coffee House. Achilles Cerrigos, Chronicles from the Future, the amazing story of Paul Amadeus Dinock. 830 pages of a diary that had to be condensed into some kind of workable story to stand the test of time and come into our time frame. Chronicles from the Future. How did you manage this going over all this content, Achilles?
It took me about 2 years. I didn't rush it. I just wanted to do my job as good as I could. And without pushing myself, trying to fully understand the content and find the things that was really interesting for the reader and that the reader could easily understand without changing the essence of the book or without changing the facts. It was difficult, but it was very intriguing. After reading the book, it was like something that I had to do. It was a goal, and the truth is that when I finished editing the book, it was already covered for my ambitions.
You were saying you threw out some things that were irrelevant. What was not relevant? What did he go into?
So the first part, before his illness, it's like a diary of a man in the 20s, which mumbles and says a lot of things again and again about his life. It's not stuff about the future, about his experience. So what I mostly edited was this part. And what I edited from his experience in the future was the part that he was kept saying the same things, amazed about what he thought. Inside his book, he repeats several times the same notions and the same things. And so to avoid these repeated same things, I kept them once or twice. So you can read the whole story and has a meaning without the reader getting tired. But also without avoiding any things that was relevant with the future. So these were mostly the things that I edited. And the next difficult thing was to find a language that was appropriate for our era, but also had an aroma of that era, which was more romantic, more, let's say, more kind.
Yeah, yes, more genteel.
Yes, yes.
Was there any romance?
Yes. The amazing thing is that there is romance in the future. According to Papahadzis, for him, he found in a girl from the future what he thinks is the soul of his loved one, which is called Anna, back in the 20s. Anna was the girl that he loved but never married. He was married to another man, and after a couple of years, she died. And Dina was a wreck after that. So there is romance in the future for him with a girl from the future that's called Sylvia. And I think that romance kept Dinach from losing his mind in the future.
You're giving me goosebumps. That is, for me, the rock, the heart, the soul, the essence of this story that somehow is timeless.
Yes. Yes, it's true. It's true. There is a love story. There is a very strong love story that... lasts for thousands of years.
Yeah, in 1800 or so, he loves this woman, this person, and they can't be together. It's not going to work in that timeline. He checks out, and he's a little depressed because you're reading it from his notes. Things aren't going, and you're talking about that timeline. That was you're talking about rocky times. So he checks out for a year accidentally. or on purpose. But so he does that, and then he goes to the future and realizes here she is. Here she is. And they reconnect, and they can connect in that timeline.
The real Northam had a crush for Sylvia, but Sylvia never liked him before the accident. because we have to say that Northam had an accident in the future, and he was clinically dead for about 1 hour. And when he recovered from his coma, Dinah's consciousness was inside him. So what Dinah says is that Andreas Northam, before Dinah get into him, he was in love with Sylvia. Sylvia didn't like him. But after the accident, Sylvia starts to realizing that this is not Andreas he knew. This was a different person. And there is a story there because Dinah in the future was asked by the superior rank of that era not to reveal his story to other persons except his doctors and one close friend of him. So during his romance with Sylvia, at least for a great part of it, he never revealed his true identity. There are some amazing things about this love story.
When I first read about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody actually lived it and it became their reality. I don't care how many ways it's impossible. The story exists. Whoa, it has to have changed you from falling into this and seeing. I mean, what for you shifted when you read, you said it did. What shifted when you started accessing this material?
I don't know. It's really amazing. Sometimes I even really don't believe it. What I have to say is that following the tracks of Dinah, George Papahadzis, when he translated the book and understood what he had in his hands, he tried to track down him, track down some information about Dinah, and he visited Zurich 12 times between 1952 and 1966, but he couldn't find a single trace of him, nor any of his relatives or any of his neighbors or his friends, because, and this is a crucial element, Dinah was thought to have fought with the Germans during World War I and probably never gave his real name in Greece, a country that had fought against the Germans. So maybe the name of Paul Amadeus Dinah is really a nickname of Dinah, whose true name we probably will never find out, because of that, of his involvement in the First World War.
Wow. Oh, there are so many ways for this story to go. There are so many ways. You bite into it and you just want to have the whole enchilada.
Yes. But I have to warn you, it's not as easy as I tell it now. Yeah, you will read the diary, and through this diary, you will see some of the future to be revealed in front of your eyes. Of course, now we are talking about the essence of the book, about the big points of the book. Probably the biggest one, and the main reason why I wanted this book to be accessible to everybody, is that it says a good story about the future. Not a catastrophe, not an apocalypse, not a destruction, a really good one. Of course, it's not for us.
We're kind of in the dark age part of the future. Now,
but for the future people,
after we're gone,
it will be good.
We're the speed bump, darn it.
We can hope for a good reincarnation in the next century.
That's right. Okay, I'm banking on it. Okay, so what's the good?
The good one is that Homo sapiens is no longer there. There's an evolution of the humans in the next evolution stage. He calls it, as the future people call it, Homo Occidentalis Novus. Let's say that he's a wiser person than us.
That's not an understatement. I think that could happen. Easily. We need an upgrade.
Another good news is that in that period and for a long period before that, people just work for 2 years in their lives. Then for the rest of his life, everything is free.
It's hard to fathom what, you know, right now people with freedom kind of get lost because it's a focus issue. And the pension for starting wars, that would be a problem.
And the data that we are keep receiving from everywhere that sometimes are good, but sometimes really make it difficult to find out the truth.
Mm-hmm. So in Greek, this book was Valley of the Roses. And now in English, it's called
Chronicles from the Future, The Amazing Paul Dinah Story.
And this is the right place, right time to get this story out.
Yes, it really is. It really is, because everybody thinks that we're in the best era of humanity, the wars are something of the past, people are more wise now, and we are not.
We're kind of the adolescents, okay?
Yes,
and it's rocky.
Yes, it's Rocky.
Rocky adolescence. Come on, get over yourself. Grow up. So this is going to point out to us that there might be a few speed bumps, and it's okay. We'll survive in spirit.
Yes, we hope.
All right. So for you, are you going to be in the story? Are you going to do a movie? Is that down the pipeline for this?
And we'll come back and revisit the movie thing. The interesting thing about this is the prophecies. All right. There's more than what we cover. So you get the globalization, the ETs, the Mars colony, all that from a guy who saw it in 1921. Unbelievable. Wendy's Coffee House.
I'm not trying to interpret and say that Dinah had this experience or stuff like that. I only say that the data is so amazing, really so amazing, that my mind can't accept that a human with Dinah's abilities and education and of that era could have conceived such a trick, let's say.
Achilles Sirigos, author of Chronicles from the Future. There is a reason for the timing on this story. We're going to get to it at the end. Bookmark the 1918 pandemic, okay? Because there's a kicker that follows this story. And this would be an incredible movie.
Really, the stuff is for a movie. Dinah's story is amazing, but also Papahadze's story is amazing with the publication of the book. So it's a two-story combo. It starts from the 19th century and goes all the way till the end of the 4000.
What were you doing before you started editing this book? Because this is something that obviously you fell into it with enthusiasm.
I'm a journalist. I work for press, newspapers, magazines, and TV channels and radio stations since 1993. I have edited a couple of books. And at this time, my job is mostly doing shows on TV, game shows, entertainment shows, stuff like that, and writing in newspapers.
I think this book is going to change your life.
I feel that it's time to change the life of other persons. Really, this is my goal from the bottom of my heart, because I think that making people to feel good, even if it is about the future, is something that we really miss in our days, when everything is so scary and nightmares and terrorism and stuff like that keeps up. And so we need a hope, and I think we can find a hope inside this book. Of course, not everybody will agree.
Well, yeah, they're so hard.
Okay, we love them anyway.
I know. That's the little infant kicking and screaming, and it's like, eventually you'll get there. It's all right. It's okay. You'll survive. Having this and having this as your goal and your project, I think, has to be very rewarding.
Yes, it is. It is something that had to be done. You know, there are some things inside you that urge you to do some things. Even they drive your hand to write or stuff like that. I think it was something like that for me.
Have you had any other spiritual inspiration going through this period?
No.
Yeah, okay, fine.
A regular person. I'm not having any lucid dreaming or stuff like that. Of course, I'm open to everything, but I'm not like experimenting with everything.
No. Sometimes you don't have to experiment. It just falls. So I'm hoping that that's in your future. You have something to look forward to.
Maybe.
Okay, fine. In your reincarnation.
Okay. But let me stay humble in my next reincarnation, please. Avoid me big things. I don't like them.
The cool thing about this is when there is an authenticity, you don't have to have the accolades. You don't have to have a big gold star. You don't have to have a medal. You realize the importance of the message. And that's really what it's all about. If you can give somebody a gift of saying, look, we do have some difficult times. We do have some challenges. And that's how we grow. That's how we become more evolved and more heartful as beings. And that upgrade that they're talking about, that name that I don't remember, that's how we become that being, by going through this period and seeing the light at the other side.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So it takes people like you to share these stories and to find them worthy and to say, okay, I don't know why I'm doing this, but dang, this is a good message. And I just got to follow my heart. And that's what it's about. It isn't about, oh, I want to do this because I'm going to be famous. It'll be $1 billion. It's like, look, folks, here's our story. We are creating it right now. We have a part of it. And this guy back in 1921 gave us a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. Let's follow that light if it says something to us. And for me, for sure, it said something. And I'm sure that everybody inside this book will find at least one thing that will make him come in peace with him, something like that.
Well, he certainly brings back information that makes us think and wonder about our next incarnation.
He says the people of the future, that they look at his eyes like children. They keep laughing. They are very simple. They are very naive. They are almost incapable of telling lies. We're talking about after the evolution, after leaving the Homo sapiens stage and going to the Homo occidentalis novus stage. Of course, every truth is inside the kids, inside their eyes, inside the way they're receiving life, inside how they smile when they see a sunbeam or when they touch the grass. And I think all our life we're trying to go back to that period of our lives and to find the gentle heart that will make us make peace with ourselves and with the rest of the world.
That's really cool. The joy, the wonder, the mm-hmm. receptivity, and the enthusiasm just for being here and looking at everything and saying, isn't that cool?
Forgive everything. Because a child says at one moment, I will kill you, and the next time he's kissing you.
Yeah. Okay. That would be bipolar.
We have to forgive.
You get away from blaming everything else for your situation, and you just say, okay, how can I shift my focus and say, what's right about this instead of what's wrong? What's the cool, the upshot? Where's the joy? Where are the miracles? They're all right here. They're all right here. So we got to go through this and grow through some of our rough spots and our skin knees and our ouches to get through the wows. I love the way this is going, and I really appreciate you for doing your work. Achille Sirigose is the author describing this incredible, fantastic, real experience a guy had when he fell into a coma and slept for a year and discovered the future that he could never see. But there was a love story in there. The website, one more time, because we're going to close.
AncientOrigins.net. Chronicles from the Future, the amazing Paul Amadeus Dinah story.
Okay, so if you're listening right now and Googling it, because we don't know when this is going to play. This is going to play once we're done with the show. This we're being listened to now in perpetuity, depending on the internet and reliability. And somebody in the future will hear this and go, oh, that's the ancients. The ancients are speaking. Listen to them. Wow, aren't they quaint? And they even laugh during that time. That's amazing. Amazing they could laugh at all those awful things. So, all right, we got to get out of here. Thank you. Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Don't you stop working, because maybe you can do, you know, a few books on this, not just one, but various aspects of all these characters. You've certainly carved out a great niche for yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chronicles from the Future is now available at Amazon. When we first did the interview, it had just been uploaded to the AncientOrigins.net site. So we were talking prior to the actual release of the book. The other thing that is interesting about this, you bookmarked pandemic of 1918, right? Okay, here's the kicker. After the flu pandemic of 1918, in the early 20s, there were a lot of cases of sleeping sickness because it damaged the brain. And then what it would cause, he had the name for it earlier in the show, but what it would cause was sleeping sickness, insomnia, or hyperinsomnia, a zombie effect. Will that part of history repeat itself? I pulled this show from the archives because it does leave a lot on the table. You can check out the book and read for yourself the things that he saw from the future. Chronicles from the Future. I'll post some links on the blog, wendyscoffeehouse.com. One way or the other, it's a fascinating story. Thanks for listening.